The Maggie Dawn Show.
Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This current tax code that they're trying to extend, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there. This is not a game. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though.
Because probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong, they tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. Milwaukee's health department is pushing back against statements from HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He said federal teams are aiding the city's response to lead paint hazards in schools. City officials clarify that no such federal support has been provided, with only a short CDC visit unrelated to the school crisis. The city continues to address the lead emergency without the CDC's childhood lead poisoning experts, who were laid off in recent federal cuts. As local officials handle the crisis alone, they warn that the absence of federal expertise is hampering efforts to protect children. The Wisconsin Realtors Association released its April report, revealing home sales experienced a significant downturn for the second consecutive month, falling 10.4% compared to April 2024, even as the median price climbed during the same period. Despite this monthly decline, year-to-date sales were down by a more moderate 3.5% compared to the first 4 months of 2024, buoyed by strong sales in January and February. Statewide, housing inventory saw a slight improvement, increasing 5.9% to a 3.6-month supply in April, yet this figure remains considerably below the 6-month supply indicative of a balanced market, which would necessitate a 67% increase in current listings. Inventory levels varied across the state, remaining static in larger metropolitan counties, with improvements in micropolitan counties and rising to a 5-month supply in rural counties. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
The crew returns home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers back home to host the Boston Red Sox this week in a 3-game series. Yesterday, the Brewers came back to win 6-5 over the Pirates at PNC Park. But the highlight of the game was Pittsburgh slugger O'Neill Cruz, 6'7", 215 pounds, who hit a solo home run that left the park and landed in the Allegheny River on the Pirates Sportsnet channel.
Drive to right field. If it's fair, it's gone. And it is gone. There's a Cruz missile. Wow. That got out of here in no time. A bomb. 122.9 miles an hour.
The fastest since they've been keeping that record. Pat Murphy after the win.
The Pirates are playing as good a baseball as they've played all year. The one kid is a monster right now. I mean, really, literally, like take over the game type guy. Who does that? That's ridiculous.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Mostly sunny this morning, becoming partly cloudy by later this afternoon. Our high today right around 72 with wind northeast becoming east at around 5 to 10. Tonight cloudy, our low 52 tomorrow. Mostly cloudy with a few scattered showers and a high near 65. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 42.
Child abuse is not a bad parent problem.
And the causes may be different than you think.
You see, paid family leave,
that prevents child abuse.
And high-quality, affordable child care
prevents child abuse, too.
Prevent Child Abuse America promotes programs and resources informed by science that help communities, parents, and kids thrive.
Because when we keep families out of crisis,
we prevent child abuse
from ever happening.
Go to PreventChildAbuse.org to learn more.
Let's solve child abuse before it ever happens.
Matt and Air on Air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Todd Alba will be here to break down all the news of the weekend. Kathy Giorgio, whose book has been banned in Waukesha, will join us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Welcome to this best of edition of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Hope you're having a good day. Let's kick things off. Let's get right into it. Talking to State Representative Christian Phelps from Eau Claire recently. He's on the Assembly Education Committee, though not a lot of education committee work is really getting done there. But before we get to that, we had spoken to Melissa Kay from our Wisconsin Rapid Station a few minutes earlier, still a little puzzled by her idea to get a new pet, a new member of the family, a new pigeon, and all of the accoutrements associated with pigeon keeping. And on the text line, Matt from Germantown asks, is she going to use it to send notes to people? Yeah. And that is the challenge I think I would lay out for Melissa. Is this just for a pet companionship, or is there going to be something utilitarian? Are we going to get some value out of this pigeon, you know, besides a potential very small, you know, dinner at some point if the pigeon
I want to make sure you. This pigeon is worth it. Send me messages. She also let us know about the whole pigeon culture, pigeon pants, pigeon mamas, pigeon cages, all the whole thing.
And
Who knew?
I just did not know if she, I just picture her back in Wisconsin Rapids right now going, I can't believe they bought all this. I can't believe pigeon pants. Who does that? We did. We're into it. Hook, line, and sinker. We are totally invested. So Matt in Germantown, good question. So again, add it to our list, Greg, of things to talk to Melissa about next week as we continue on Pigeon Watch, the Melissa Kay edition.
2025.
All right. Let's turn to our homeroom segment now and talk to State Representative Christian Phelps from Eau Claire, a member of the Assembly Education Committee, and friends of the show will recall joining us quite frequently on behalf of the Wisconsin Public Education Network prior to his election to the Assembly. Representative Phelps, how are you?
I'm great. Good to see you this morning.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here as well. You know what? Before we get into the education aspect of it, maybe your ears were burning, but Dan Schaefer was mentioning you, and we were talking about his column about races to watch, legislators to watch from now through November of next year in the districts that were close in the presidential race and with new less gerrymandered maps have led to more competitive races, and maybe Democrats have a chance to even take the majority in the legislature. And obviously you've been noticed right out of the gate, not just for the conditions of the district, but your work ethic and all the knowledge of education that you bring into this race. So I wanted to get your impression on being listed as one of those, you know, races to watch already, whether like me, you know, you become a one and done, one term, thanks for serving, moving on, or, you know, if folks there think you've got legs and are going to be around for a little bit, kind of nice to be on a list of people getting a little extra attention, I think.
I guess so. I mean, we got plenty of attention last year because it was really the first chance mathematically that the 93rd had to flip in 14 years because of how gerrymandered it had been. And so people were already kind of watching and paying attention. And I had the privilege and luxury and exhaustion of having a competitive Democratic primary and then a competitive general election. So it was a very busy year and it worked out. And I think our work is not done because, as I'm sure we'll discuss momentarily, we did not quite get the majority. We gained 10 seats in one swoop. That's pretty good. But there's a pretty hard limit on the amount of policy work you can get done when you work in the minority party in the legislature. And so, I think next year we will have some agenda items to really go back to the voters with and sell. And I think it's going to work out even better for us. But we have to keep the 93rd in our control in order to get that majority and actually get some things done, including investing in public schools, including rural public schools in the 93rd. So I look forward to talking to everybody about that.
Well, and you have a majority that is much thinner for Republicans and yet is still trying to create that illusion of full and total control, rather than seeing, perhaps more bipartisanship than some folks would have expected with more competitive districts, which takes us to the Assembly Education Committee on which you serve. And certainly, I'm sure I framed the question similarly at the start of the session. And how did you think the Assembly Education Committee work would unfold? And I'm going to put it in those same terms again this time around. How much of what you're seeing put in front of you by majority Republicans on the Education Committee is substantive and directly related to improving, education quality in our classrooms versus what I would call sideshows, but other people just might say, issues that aren't as relevant to the direct education of our kids. How would your 30,000 foot view of the committee look so far?
Yeah, it's a busy one. And so we've gotten plenty of content in the first four and a half months here. And it is not substantive. That's my observation. The luxury of being a new person in the legislature is that I can kind of walk around the Capitol with a flashlight and go into nooks and crannies and say, on behalf of the people of Wisconsin, why doesn't anything good ever happen around here? Like, what's going on? And a big part of it is just the agenda setting. So there are proposals introduced that would be substantive, that would help make it easier for kids to learn and teachers to teach in Wisconsin and here in the 93rd. And then what happens is that the majority decides what moves forward and what doesn't. So, for example, on the Education Committee, we have 9 Republicans and 4 Democrats, which does not reflect the nearly 50-50 legislature. So ungerrymander the maps, gerrymander the committees to maintain your control. And so it was always kind of an open question. Is there going to be more bipartisanship with the closer assembly makeup? Or are they going to kind of behave exactly the same way as they did when they had that manufactured one-party rule? So far, they're doing the latter. And so on that committee, we've gotten several full days of bills to hear and then debate and then release, and then they make it to the floor. Those bills have been about things like whether we call our test standards basic or developing. That took many, many hours of taxpayer-funded time. We decided whether teachers should be allowed to use students' pronouns. We have discussed whether cursive should be mandatory, but proposals to do things like invest in school lunches for all and make them and reimburse school districts so that families can spend less on groceries and every single child can be fed at school. That was proposed in January, has not even been given a hearing yet. So the agenda setting by the majority party is one of the main reasons that so little good stuff gets done in the Capitol. If I could shine a light on that for the community, it's not great news, but it is true.
And I would take it a step further and seize on what you said there about some good bills like school lunches for all kids, not even getting a hearing. And so when we talk about a group that still is maintaining the illusion of all-encompassing power, it's one that looks at a bill like that. And they could say, well, let's give this thing a hearing right away. We don't want to pass it. We think, kids getting school lunches is welfare or whatever their position is. But the fact that they won't even give a bill like that a hearing kind of gives away the game in terms of where they want to keep 100% of their focus, which appears to be on all of these, culture war issues and things like that. As you've looked through the budget process, as you looked at what Governor Evers proposed for education, what you would like to see versus what the Republicans have done in the Joint Finance Committee, have you been encouraged by anything that you've seen there so far as the budget starts to become put together by Republicans?
I'm so glad you asked that, Pat, because it is a perfectly fair question, and I wish I had a better answer. It's perfectly logical to say, you know, maybe a lot of the important public education issues belong in the budget. So maybe we don't need to talk about standalone bills until after the budget process is over. So the governor proposed the budget bill, and then Wisconsinites were invited to four public hearings at the committee, the Joint Finance Committee, to voice where they stand on that budget bill that the governor had proposed. He had proposed doubling the state's commitment to special ed funding, which is way, way, way below where it needs to be right now, and even further below what they fund private schools at. He proposed increases to per pupil aid. He proposed things like the Healthy Meals, Healthy Kids program, teacher apprenticeship and grow your own programs to address the teacher shortage, and peer-to-peer suicide prevention grants in schools, really important stuff that got overwhelming support at those public hearings before the Joint Finance Committee. Everything I just listed was taken out all at once by the Republicans on that committee after hearing from Wisconsinites in their first executive session on the budget, where they removed 612 items from the governor's budget bill. So at this rate, the bill that they give us as the legislature out of that committee to vote on, the biennial state budget, will not look anything like the budget that the governor proposed. And on education issues, it zeroed out almost every popular proposal that Wisconsinites overwhelmingly said that they actually wanted to see in there.
Which actually presents both an opportunity and a challenge for Democrats, who can either shrug their shoulders and, you know, the voters just get the impression of, well, what are you going to do? You know, they threw it out. That's what they do. They're in the majority, as opposed to now they're on record saying these are good ideas and we don't like them. And so, you know, we Democrats are going to say to those Republicans, these are good ideas and so forth and so on. So, I mean, you've got, even in the setback of having these things thrown out, it seems like you have a messaging opportunity going forward.
Yeah, I think it's really bold for the Republican members of the Joint Finance Committee to do this again. They've done it to the last few budgets Governor Evers put forward, but at that time they had manufactured a two-thirds majority in the legislature. But now they have colleagues like me and many others, 23 new Democrats in the Assembly alone, who represent competitive districts. They themselves represent competitive districts, many of them who didn't before. And, you know, in my case, I represent a lot of rural residents of Western Wisconsin who don't have a private school around. They're not interested in spending their taxpayer funds on private education. Their public schools have had to go to referendum just to stay open. In many cases, the public school district is the largest employer in these communities, and they have a representative who's going to tell them the truth about what's happening in the Capitol and why their public schools are struggling. Republicans haven't really had to face that in recent sessions, so it's awfully bold and dangerous politically for their future to continue to take out popular and much-needed proposals from the budget without further consideration after hearing from people, because now they have colleagues who are going to hold them accountable for it. And frankly, you know, nobody has asked me or anybody else to sit back and use only a fraction of our power here. I think if there's one thing that's clear after the 2024 election and 2025 state of politics at local, state, and federal levels, people want their elected officials to use as much power as they can muster to fight for them. And so, you know, I'm a first-term member. I'm not on the Joint Finance Committee. I'm not the governor. There's a limit to how much power I have, but whatever I have, and however many loud microphones I can find to sort of speak the truth into, I'm going to use it, because that's what people are asking us to do.
Well, and that's what we appreciate, having you here on our homeroom segment and, you know, throughout the course of your work to help people understand it's not just what's in the final budget bill, but all of this, you know, if you want to call it sausage making, that's fine. But it is important to know that there were some good healthy ingredients that were set to go into the sausage, and we're getting a whole lot of filler and garbage instead. State Representative Christian Phelps is a member of the Assembly Education Committee and is a first-term Democratic state rep from Eau Claire. Christian, good to talk to you as always. Hope you have a great day.
Yeah, great to talk to you too. Thanks all for inviting me.
You bet. Take care. Hey, more is coming right up, but first, thanks for spending some time here as part of your mornings, powered by Up North News. We'll have more from Chippewa Falls in just a bit here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We are in a rare moment right now in Wisconsin politics. Why, you ask? Well, it's because we are not actively in the middle of a campaign cycle. It's been more than 6 weeks now since any of us have seen a campaign ad. It's been pretty nice, hasn't it? The moment we're in is as close as we're going to get to a political off-season here in Wisconsin. And we need to take advantage of this moment by taking action to improve our democracy. That means taking steps to address money in politics, cleaning up some issues with election administration, and creating a long-term plan for nonpartisan redistricting. In some cases, we can't make these kinds of changes in the middle of a campaign, so we need to be thinking about what we can do now. There's a lot both parties can agree on here, too. So let's make some moves this offseason, Wisconsin. Seize this moment to make a better, stronger, more inclusive democracy.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though.
Because probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong. They tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This current tax code that they're trying to extend, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there. This is not a game. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
One of the features of our new lineup change here at Civic Media is that we get to spend more time visiting with folks like Earl Ingram, who's going to continue to do reports, interviews, and projects for our stations in Southeast Wisconsin. Chad Holmes, who's doing things out of Wausau. You got James Kelly reporting out of the Chippewa Valley and more. And we get to visit with them sporadically throughout the week. We spoke recently with Earl Ingram about one of his first big interview projects he's going to be sharing with listeners. Earl, how you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm great. It's so nice to have you here and finding out the kinds of folks that you've been talking to and the stories that you've been covering. And I wanted to find out more about this series of conversations that you're going to be having with Dr. Howard Fuller. For folks not from the Milwaukee area, he was the former superintendent and one of the driving forces behind the original voucher program, which, Earl, I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I say the original school voucher program was very, very different from what the voucher programs have become all across the state, right?
Well, the original voucher program was created by State Representative Annette Polly Williams, Dr. Howard Fuller, and her assistant, Larry Howell, during the time that Governor Tommy Thompson was governor. And it was created because then State Representative Annette Polly Williams, and long-term State Representative Annette Polly Williams, thought that it was important that poor Black children had an equal opportunity at education. And so she sat down with, again, Dr. Howard Fuller and Larry Harwell, and they created an opportunity for then parochial schools, some of them, to take on Black children who didn't have the economic wherewithal to join the parochial schools to pay for the tuition. And then Governor Tommy Thompson thought it was a laudable exercise, and that's what they did. They created vouchers. It was created solely in the city of Milwaukee. Then President George Bush the first and Scott Walker and others looked at it and thought it was something that they could push across the entire nation, and started pushing it across the state of Wisconsin, and then eventually across the nation, became very popular. And as we see today, it's mushroomed, and certainly it causes havoc to public schools all across the state and all across the nation.
Do you get the impression from talking to Dr. Fuller? I mean, does that lead to any sense of regret, either in the creation of it originally, or that there should have been some mechanism somewhere along the way that would prevent it from metastasizing the way that it has become just a cancer on Wisconsin public education statewide today?
Well, Dr. Fuller will clearly state that what has happened to the vision that they had is not what they envisioned. When you look at the fact that there used to be a time when if you wanted to send your child to a private school, then you did that out of your own pocket. And today, the way things are situated, whether or not you can afford to send your child to a private school, if you can, now taxpayers are saddled with paying for even those who economically don't need the support because of the way it's been jerry-rigged now, vouchers or you know, school choice does not have an impact on, you know, whether or not you are a person who is low income or upper income. We're going to pay all, taxpayers pay for it all.
Sorry, I had myself on mute there. Yes, they most certainly do. And so obviously we will be talking to State Representative Christian Phelps in our next half hour about what's happening on the Assembly Education Committee. But the work for educating students goes on. And so you're also talking to Dr. Fuller about his continued work to help improve reading skills, learning to read amongst Milwaukee school kids. Is that right?
Well, Dr. Fuller, it's not only about Milwaukee school kids. It's okay. The work that he's working on is to address, he thinks that one of the reasons why children, not just in the city of Milwaukee, but across the state and across the nation, reading scores have dropped precipitously. And so this is not something that is solely about Milwaukee children. It is national. And so he believes that teachers don't know how to teach reading anymore. And so he's pushing this new initiative that he's created that will improve the reading scores of children all over this nation.
So that will be a focus of what Earl Ingram is talking to Dr. Fuller about. And you said this is going to roll out over a couple of different parts of conversations that you're going to be having?
Well, that actually is going to start. I'm going to begin the interview process with him on June 3rd. I've done several others, I think, really laudable and worthy interviews with people prior to this. So we're going to be rolling things out shortly.
I mean, I am so looking forward to this, to having the ability to do more of this long form reporting and visits, because there are so many stories that need to be told. There are lessons that need to be learned that, you know, you and the folks that you're talking to are in such a position to make. And we can't get to that from the pinball machine that is the daily news cycle. So I'm glad to get to visit with you about these upcoming conversations with Dr. Fuller. Earl, I appreciate that update. Thank you so much.
Thank you as well.
All right. Also new on our website and LinkedIn, the newsletter, the Wisconsin Race Guide for 2025. All the best places to race or run, walk, fun run, 5K, 10K, half marathon, full marathon, you name it. Our Wisconsin Race Guide for 2025 is on our website, upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe in the banner up on top to get our newsletters. Still ahead, we'll talk to somebody who knows firsthand the real-life experiences of people who need SNAP and Medicaid and all of the other vital services when times get tough. The services that Republicans in Congress have just recently voted to gut. More coming up in a bit here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
From the center, WRCE. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Wisconsin dairy farmers, get ready. Starting June 1st, the way your milk check is calculated gets changed. I'm Pam Yonke, starting you off before the opening bell on a finally Friday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. That's when the changes proposed to the federal milk marketing order go into effect. Leonard Polzin is a dairy economist at UW River Falls and is a dairy extension specialist. He explains what he hopes the changes to the federal milk marketing order mean for Wisconsin dairies in the long run.
When we do the math and calculate it all the way through, at the end of the day, we're still initially in this first month here at a negative, but the hope is all of these other adjustments will make it less negative, and that over time, through, you know, these market incentives, again, of pooling more milk, we can hopefully get more premiums back, we can have less negative PPDs, and that as we go on, we can see greater or higher milk prices than what we would see otherwise.
There you have it. Dr. Leonard Polzin, he's a University Extension Dairy Specialist at UW River Falls, painting a bit of a picture on what Wisconsin dairy farmers should be aware of beginning June 1st when those federal milk marketing order changes go into effect. Well, yesterday in Chicago, commodities stayed fairly firm. Numbers are next.
Don't let sick calves get you down and drain your profits. Get your calves up and moving with BioVet's Calf Electrolyte. Our Baselite product contains balanced electrolytes for restoring and maintaining proper fluid levels in scouring calves. Baselite also provides additional energy to support recovery. It's easy to mix, and calves are easy to drink it down to the last drop. Learn more about Baselite at bio-vet.com.
Innovation.
When it's time to choose a residual herbicide for your soybeans, you need broad-spectrum weed control that lasts. Zidua Pro and Zidua SC herbicides by BASF give your crop up to 2 more weeks of residual weed control, providing 50% more control than other Group 15 residuals. The long-lasting herbicide portfolio protects your soybeans from even the toughest weeds while providing a steady growing environment for the entire season. Talk to your retailer today about adding Zidua Pro and Zidua SC herbicides to your 2025 plan. Always read and follow label directions.
Well, traders are obviously looking forward to the Memorial weekend. Remember, no trading on Monday. On the close yesterday in Chicago, July corn finished 2 cents stronger. December new crop down to 453 and a quarter. Soybeans for July were up about a nickel. November new crop up three at 1055 and a quarter. July wheat on Thursday closed 4¾ cents lower, 544 and a half. As far as the dairy complex, barrel cheese on Thursday up 0.75 cents at 187. 40-pound block cheese up a penny and a quarter at 194¾. Double A butter was up 236 and a quarter per pound. There's a quick market update. I'm Pam Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Mostly sunny this morning, becoming partly cloudy by later this afternoon. Our high today right around 72 with wind northeast becoming east at around 5 to 10. Tonight cloudy, our low 52 tomorrow. Mostly cloudy with a few scattered showers and a high near 65. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 41.
Yo, I'm your old basketball. Haven't seen you out on the courts in a while. Why not pass me over to Goodwill? Donating me helps Goodwill's mission to provide career training and support services right here in the community. And that's a slam dunk. Donate today. Hey, I got next.
To find your nearest Goodwill locations and to learn more about our mission, please visit goodwill.org. Goodwill, where your things start new lives.
Matt Nair on air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Evers' budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt Nair on air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time for a very special Memorial Day episode. We talk to Jeremy Lyon from the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs on our cemeteries, honoring our veterans and more. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
As Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress try to make massive cuts to safety net programs in order to give the wealthiest people and companies more tax breaks, they're doing so under the phony cover of attacking so-called waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, that's not to say there isn't some level of misuse in any program. Same could be said in your workplace. But that doesn't mean you fire a chunk of the workforce in order to give the CEO a bigger paycheck. But the truth is that a lot of Americans are hurting for a variety of reasons. And instead of providing more jobs or more job training or opportunities for education or help with child care or health care costs, the response from Trump and Republicans to all these financially struggling families is, well, too bad. Our friends need the money. We talked to someone who helps process SNAP and Medicaid eligibility for struggling families in Wisconsin. He traveled to Washington this week to give members of the state's congressional delegation an insider's view of how these massive cuts would impact real people in our state.
My name is Abdiel Martinez. My job is I'm a SNAP and Medicaid eligibility specialist. The official title is Economic Support Specialist, and I do that in Dane County, Wisconsin.
At what point do you have your first point of contact with somebody, and then tell me how the process is supposed to work?
There's four ways you can apply. You can apply the paper format. You can apply over the phone. You can apply on the online website that they have, or come into a local agency and apply in person. When you apply, we ask for verification of income, depending on if there's an immigration status, right? So if they're not a U.S. citizen, we ask to verify immigration status. Once we verify the income for SNAP, we look at utilities and expenses. After going through all that and jumping through all those hoops, right, every case is always different. After all that, though, we go ahead and review their income, if they're above or below the income limits. If they're below, they would be eligible and we would be able to get them set up with for the SNAP benefits, for Medicaid and items like that. And if they don't qualify, we give them resources to the local areas where they could look for, alternative care, free clinics, go to the marketplace, the Affordable Care Act, and just kind of give them a couple other options that way.
How is it conveyed to people when they first come to you that this is temporary relief designed to help get you through a tough time, and that this is not something that would necessarily be a permanent state? I mean, it may be for, say, Medicaid, disability, and things like that, but especially SNAP or for people who are newly unemployed, how is that conveyed that this is, in a perfect world, meant to be a temporary bridge to better times?
When it comes to to SNAP and Medicaid, it really comes to a point where, you have people who from all backgrounds are applying, right? You could see people who just lost their jobs applying. You could see people who may have not have applied in years and are reapplying after 5, 6, 7 years since they last received the benefit. It really depends on the situation that people are going through. And, you know, you have a family of five where both mom and dad are working full time and still can't afford their groceries. If they have insurance to their job, you know, the cost of that insurance to have for their kids is too high for them where they can't afford it. And so Medicaid kind of fills in that gap where they can get the Medicaid for their children, despite them working both full time. But it's to a point where, you know, if it becomes unaffordable, if they can't afford food after working full time or healthcare, you know, is it really temporary, or, you know, it comes up to kind of a point where they have to kind of rely on that?
Well, especially, yes, for the children and for their health. So this whole notion that we're hearing the need for all these cuts because there's waste from all these folks who are otherwise employable, it seems to me that really misses how unstable families are economically around Wisconsin and around the country. And I wonder if you share that sense of economic instability that a lot of families are experiencing.
You know, it's kind of interesting to hear those phrases, you know, because I try to look at it kind of based on my experience. You know, So I've been doing this job for a year. And before that, I would work at a hospital to help people apply for Medicaid. I was at a company. This wasn't through the state or the county or anything. And I would see people in many different situations where they don't have insurance, or they just lost their insurance. And they have to pay, let's just say, around about $20,000 for appendix, for ER visit. And it comes to a point where when you're in the hospital, you're recovering and things like that, and you can't work, you're not able to work because everyone's body recovers differently. If you can't work for X amount of weeks or months, you know, depending on your situation, on paper, yeah, maybe it looks like you can work, but in reality, you can't because of your health, because of this, because of that. So that's what I try to focus on the most when I hear those words abroad and being able to work. It's just like, it's an individual basis. You know, it's really just the need people have at some point.
There was a phrase that I used a lot when I was campaigning, that there are just so many people in Wisconsin who are one illness, one accident, or one layoff away from poverty. And it has always appeared to me that there is a certain group of folks in the country and in the state that don't want to believe that many families really are that close, that one accident, one injury, one illness, one layoff would make that big a difference. Do you see that on a regular basis?
I would say yes. I mean, I can say, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I've gotten calls from, you know, a young person who had some savings that they waited until the last minute to apply for SNAP benefits. There's people who didn't expect to lose their jobs over the winter, and all of a sudden, you know, they got their last paycheck, they got paid good money, and, you know, all of a sudden, they don't have insurance. They don't have food security anymore for the next month and the following month, because who knows how long it takes for them to get their job. And so, you know, and kind of adding on to what you were saying, Pat, you know, not just that, I think in reality, we're just two or three paychecks away from having to make decisions of, do we decide to pay for food, or do we decide to take our children to the doctor? Do we decide to buy this necessity for our transportation, or do we decide, to buy dinner for tonight? So, you know, kind of adding on to that, you know, it really doesn't take that long for us to find ourselves in a situation where we would need to apply for these programs.
When you do that as a SNAP eligibility specialist, and again, I say this as somebody who, you know, grew up on, you know, what you would call food stamps with a single mom back in the day there. So when you hear that there's this potential for billions, maybe even a couple hundred billion dollars in cuts to SNAP and other nutritional assistance programs, I mean, that's such a big number. I don't think registers at the human level with a lot of people. If that were to really happen, what would be the human toll, do you think, around where you live and around Wisconsin and the country?
Where to begin on that? I mean, just looking at SNAP specifically, the max for one a single household, right, one person in the home, is $292 a month, right? So a little bit less than $300. And that's in a perfect world where you can get the max. So going off that and, you know, looking at the income, looking at your expenses, you qualify for the max allotment, having these cuts for people who are already receiving the benefit or, you know, kind of taking it a step further where you have people who never thought themselves as needing that benefit, now having that door closed to them, you know, you're taking away food security for those people, you're taking away health insurance security, you know, and with that, they go from a state of barely of surviving to just barely surviving or even lower than that. There are people who don't qualify for that. The minimum we can give is 23. So if you qualify for SNAP benefits, but the only amount after jumping all those hoops, you only qualify for $23. What can that get you at that point? Having those cuts would basically make millions of Americans vulnerable to food insecurity, to having lack of health insurance, and thinking about what that impact could have on going through Wisconsin, right? The impact of those people who rely on that benefit for their children aren't going to be able to get checkups. You know, they're not going to be able to get food. They're not going to be able to go to the doctor. You know, you have cases where they have a serious illness and have to go to the ER. You know, the parents are going to be stuck with that medical bill. So the impacts, just even thinking about it locally, kind of, you know, are scary to even think about.
You have decided to go to Washington and talk to members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation about this. That included Senator Baldwin's office and meeting with Congressman Mark Pocan. So let's start with them. Do you feel like Congressman Pocan gets it when it comes to the dangers of that level of cuts?
So when we met with Mark Pocan, you know, it was, and I think of it like kind of like, you know, being kind of just learning even in a deeper level how government works. But when I met with him, you know, as soon as we started talking, I shared my story, you know, and likewise goes with Senator Baldwin's office. You know, they were both on board that these cuts should not be made. They were both saying, no, we shouldn't be having these cuts in general. And that kind of reinforced, you know, my, I would say, trust, or I guess, you know, kind of confirmed, you know, the thoughts that Wisconsin has as a whole, I guess you could say. You know, I don't speak for everybody, but just hearing that from our representatives, from our congressmen, you know, it really shows to me like that at least they're listening to what their citizens are saying, what their people are saying.
I understand that you tried to reach out to Congressman Derek Van Orden as well. Have you heard anything back yet about potentially informing him or a staffer about your view on how bad these cuts could affect people?
We did reach out and attempt to schedule a meeting, but we haven't heard anything back.
We have heard from the congressman, though, that he quite angrily denies that any cuts made in the House Agriculture Committee to nutritional supplement programs would hurt regular folks. He has repeatedly framed it as going after waste, fraud, bureaucracy, abuse, things like that. I ask you, as somebody who, now admittedly you've been at this for, like you said, a year or so, but do you look at this and say, my gosh, there is so much waste, fraud, and abuse under SNAP benefits that I totally see how Congress can find a couple $100 billion to cut? Or do you not see such a massive level of waste, fraud, and abuse?
You know, whenever I think of the words and I hear those words coming from people of power and saying, oh, waste, fraud, abuse in these programs, you know, it really comes to a point where the overall economic impact of just not having these programs, right? If this were a program that was being abused, that was being taken advantage of, you know, my thinking is, how would cuts better this program. Because in reality, the purpose of these programs are clear. You know, you have the overall economic impact that we discussed earlier of people having to make that decision of, you know, can they afford to go out to eat? Can they afford to pay for a repair in their car, right? And it always happens at the worst times. You know, can they afford to do X, Y, Z thing? Or do they have to make a decision to go to the doctor? You know, there's times where, you know, when people say, oh, there's waste, fraud, and abuse, when in reality, it's just people looking for help. And that's what I see the most, is people looking for help, looking for that assistance that they would need. And so when they say that, you know, it doesn't come to mind, because in reality, it's just people looking for help in these difficult times.
Zeb, we appreciate that very much. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here, Pat.
Zeb Martinez of Dane County, working with AFSCME and urging others to contact their members of Congress to oppose cuts to struggling families. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Are you over 50 and constantly feeling tired, bloated, or just a little off? Don't ignore it. Those could be signs that your liver is crying for help. As we age, our liver, which is essential for metabolism, digestion, immunity, and detoxification, needs extra support and protection. If neglected, it can leave you feeling sluggish and constantly off your game. That's where Active Liver from New Nordic comes in. Available in easy-to-take tablets or delicious gummies, Active Liver combines powerful natural ingredients like turmeric, milk thistle, and globe artichoke extract to help support healthy liver function. With Active Liver, you're giving your body an essential daily defense against toxins from alcohol, fatty foods, and sweets, helping you reclaim your energy, improve digestion, lose the bloat, and strengthen your immunity so you can look and feel your best again. Protect your liver and give it the support that it deserves by making Active Liver from New Nordic part of your daily wellness routine. Find Active Liver in stores at your local CVS, Meijer Grocery, or online at Amazon or NewNordicUSA.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We are in a rare moment right now in Wisconsin politics. Why, you ask? Well, it's because we are not actively in the middle of a campaign cycle. It's been more than 6 weeks now since any of us have seen a campaign ad. It's been pretty nice, hasn't it? The moment we're in is as close as we're going to get to a political off-season here in Wisconsin. And we need to take advantage of this moment by taking action to improve our democracy. That means taking steps to address money in politics, cleaning up some issues with election administration, and creating a long-term plan for nonpartisan redistricting. In some cases, we can't make these kinds of changes in the middle of a campaign, so we need to be thinking about what we can do now. There's a lot both parties can agree on here, too. So let's make some moves this offseason, Wisconsin. Seize this moment to make a better, stronger, more inclusive democracy.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Nightlight with Pete Schwalba.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though. Because
probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong. They tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
When we got our home appraised, we felt robbed. Compared to a similar home right around the corner, our appraisal was $80,000 less.
Latino and Black homeowners are about twice as likely as white homeowners to get low appraisals. If you believe your home has been unfairly appraised because of race or national origin, contact HUD at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Everyone has a right to fair housing. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
I'm Pat Kreitlow here on the Civic Media Radio Network. As you know, when the show was expanded to 3 hours a couple of weeks back, that gave us the opportunity to add some more regular guests. Some you'll still hear at 6:30, some at 7:30, now some at 8:30. And a few at 8:30, we sometimes go a little long and tape a little bit extra and are able to share it with you at 6:30 the next morning. That is the case with Dan Schaefer, the political editor at Civic Media, and of course the creator of the Recombobulation Area, which is now, what is it, a 19-time Milwaukee Press Club award-winning news site. And along with all of his other work, Dan continues to write columns for his area and for Civic Media, the most recent of which is a new column about the state legislators to keep an eye on for the rest of this session in lieu of what are going to be some big elections next year. I know every election's big. These are going to be big elections next year. Could flip control of the state legislature. So I asked Dan a little bit more about the focus of this new column.
We have a real chance at accountability now that we have new maps. And so these are the legislators in the most closely contested districts. These are the ones that are most vulnerable to having the voters boot them out of office next year. You know, we all know that we're going to be paying attention to, you know, folks like Robin Voss and the Assembly Speaker, the Devin Lemahue, the Majority Leader in the Senate, and, you know, certain other legislative leaders who are, you know, key on certain committees. But I think as we look ahead to 2026, which I guess we are doing just to a certain extent today with some of these announcements with Chris Taylor, with Randy Bryce, also, you know, just kind of an eye on 2026, because especially for the state Senate, there are only half of the state Senate has been on the ballot under new maps. And so there are three Republican state senators serving in districts that were won by Kamala Harris last year, Howard Markline, Rob Hutton, and Van Wangard. So those three, you know, if Democrats were to win those three districts, and again, those are districts won by Kamala Harris just last fall, then they would be able to flip the state Senate. And that would really change a whole lot about our politics. So I think it is important for us to watch what's happening with those three senators in particular, but also, you know, the rest of the list here of the 23. I've got both Democrats and Republicans on here that are in closely competitive districts. And particularly on the Democratic side, as I look through, you know, the assembly representatives who won some of these closer races last year, a lot of them are in their first term. You know, right? You don't know exactly how things are going to play out in a legislator's first term. So I think, you know, for those who maybe I was on the edge of including in the list, if it was their first term, I put them on the list because you never know what type of approach somebody might bring to the office. And so I think this is just a reminder to people that we have an avenue for accountability. If you know, a lot of people were really upset about the Republican controlled state legislature's Joint Finance Committee voting 600 plus items out of Tony Evers' budget on critical things like childcare and healthcare, education, up and down the list. And so I think a lot of people are upset about that and wondering what they can do to hold certain legislators accountable. Well, I think, you know, this is the first, or, you know, the list of legislators who are in those most closely competitive districts who will have to defend the votes that they make now and in the next 2 months on the in the budget. And as, you know, so many different bills make their way through the legislature, you know, and to keep an eye on what's going to happen in the years ahead, because we as the voters can bring actual accountability in ways we could not when we were stuck under the gerrymander.
Well, you've got rookies and veterans over here in the Chippewa Valley, for example. You have Jody Emerson, who's a Democrat from Eau Claire, but her district is no longer just the city of Eau Claire, so it's not as safe as it used to be. You have Christian Phelps from Eau Claire, a brand new Democrat who could be a real up-and-comer, but only if he can defend his seat in 2026. And then you have State Senator Jeff Smith, who has a lot of experience in the Capitol, but in a district that is notoriously purple, and where I feel like he's really mastered, and I know he's a friend of mine as I say this, but he's really mastered the retail politics of it. But it's a district that still very much could go depending on, you know, external factors out of Jeff Smith's control. So just in that one area alone, you can see how competitive districts have made it by, as we've always been saying, not a lock that Democrats get an advantage, but more so than under gerrymandered maps.
Yeah, and Smith is a really interesting case, too. You know, he won re-election in 2022, and in 2024, Kamala Harris won the seat, but only by 2 points, right? So this is a close. You know, if voters don't like what the Democrats are doing in the process, here's an opportunity for accountability there as well. And so, you know, and I think just the list more broadly really highlights a lot of what are so often the swing areas of the state. You have, you know, your neck of the woods in the Chippewa Valley and the Eau Claire area is always going to be part of that. Western Wisconsin, there are many districts in Western Wisconsin on this list. La Crosse area, Fox Valley always emerges as a really important swing region. The Milwaukee area suburbs, there are a number of districts there. Again, I mentioned, you know, Rob Hutton before. I think his might be the most interesting for next year on the map, because, you know, this is a seat that Kamala Harris won by 6 points in the western suburbs in a rapidly shifting part of the area. And I've noticed that Hutton has posted a couple photos on his social media feeds with Tony Evers. So, you know, would that be happening if he was in a deep red safe district? I don't know.
No chance. Very quickly, state Republicans had their convention, including the WisPolitics straw poll. What did you glean from that?
Fascinating straw poll. I thought, you know, the fact that Josh Shulman and Tom Tiffany were the kind of the top two vote getters on there. Boy, that is not a deep bench for the Republicans. We actually had a piece on Josh Shulman at the Recombobulation Area that we published yesterday from a guest contributor named Jordan Morales, taking a look at some of his record in 2022, not being able to get a police funding referendum passed in one of the reddest counties in Wisconsin. And now Josh Shulman on that record is trying to run for governor.
That's Dan Schaefer. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Looks like those 50% tariffs on goods from the EU won't be going into effect on June 1st after all.
President Trump announcing an extension on his proposed 50% blanket tariff on imports from the European Union, one of America's biggest trading partners. Trump now moving the tariff start date from June 1st to July 9th after speaking with the head of the European Commission.
She asked for an extension on the June 1st date. And she said she wants to get down to serious negotiation.
Just days ago, Trump called the EU very difficult to deal with and said talks were going nowhere.
ABC's Andrew Dimpert. Russia and Ukraine completing their prisoner swap on Sunday, and just hours later, Russia launched the largest drone and missile attack since the start of the war on Ukraine, leaving 18 people dead and leaving dozens injured. Israeli airstrikes killing nearly 50 people in Gaza overnight, including three dozen displaced Palestinians who've been sheltering at a school. Israel says that location